This week's episode of the FitCast is brought to you by TurbulenceTraining.com and also Greens Plus. I'm Kevin Larrabee.
And I'm John Williams.
And with us this week, we have a special guest, Lou Schuler.
Dr. John Berardi.
One-on-one with Craig Ballantyne.
One-on-one interview with Bill Hartman.
I'm Eric Cressy.
Can't forget our shakes this week.
It's a hell of a super shake.
Yeah, let's start off with this week's news. Need any updates for the FitCast to get the show notes with all the links for the show, just go to thefitcast.com for all your FitCast needs. Hello and welcome to episode number 17 of the FitCast for August 6th, 2006. My name's Kevin Larrabee.
And I'm John Williams.
And we have a special guest this week, John Sullivan. Hello, John. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for coming on the show. I know it was a little kind of short timing, but we're glad you could make it this week.
No problem.
Yeah, thanks for coming on.
Could you tell us a little bit about yourself before we get it started?
Well, I am the co-owner of Excel Sport and Fitness, a new training facility in Waltham, Massachusetts. And I am also a competitive strongman in the 200-pound weight class.
Awesome.
Cool. How's Excel Fitness going? We talked to Eric about that.
It's coming along. We've been getting a lot of exposure lately in the local papers, online, of course, from Eric and from Brad Cardoza, one of the other owners. Mm-hmm. And just people in the community have seen our ads and seen our banners. We have a banner right on Route 95. I mean, it's 100,000 plus people go by it every day.
Yeah.
So people
Very
are
cool.
certainly seeing it, and they're starting to come in.
Very cool. That sounds awesome. Next time I'm in Waltham, I'll have to look you guys up.
That's right.
Yeah.
And I'll be heading down there sooner or later. I don't know why I'm about 40 minutes away, and I still have yet to get down there. I've just been so busy with all the FitCast things that have been going on. But I promise to get down there and shoot some video footage and actually meet you guys at some point.
Yeah, that'd be a good time.
Definitely, and hopefully there'd be some outtakes. Did someone just break something?
Can you hear that background noise? Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know if someone just broke something.
No, I got a neighbor out doing some yard work. But as you know, Kevin, my
is it that pedophile?
That's the story, but I don't really believe it. Sarah apparently looked up something on the internet, and God knows what. So who knows? But, yeah, we're just doing some yard work around here.
That's cool. As long as he's not looking into your windows. Well, starting at this show, we're actually going to start off with the shakes before we get into any of the news. So let's start it off. I'll say I'm not really doing anything much this week. I'm just doing some BioTest strawberry grow and some water.
Nice.
Nothing too crazy, but I wasn't really too adventurous this week.
You're having a crunch berry shake?
Yeah, see, John actually finally tried it out when I came to Denver last week, and truth be told, it tastes just like crunch berries, so it's awesome.
It really does taste awesome. It's the best tasting strawberry I've had. I don't typically like strawberry protein powder. It gets old fast, but that seemed like that was a pretty good one. John, you drink anything with us today?
I'm not as good as you guys are. You know, I'm a strong man, not a bodybuilder, so I'll typically do Muscle Milk maybe with some ice cream. I like calories, so I like calories.
Gotcha.
Get a little fat.
As long as there's that make strength and power involved. Very cool. Well, I actually got. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, I got an echo on my earphones, but I actually got a package from Chris Sugart at T-Nation, and he generously sent me the new BioTest Metabolic Drive Complete, and I was really happy about that. I got the vanilla kicking today, and I also saw the recent article from Chad Waterbury, sort of 16 things that changed my life on T-Nation. And in there he had a super shake recipe, which I tried with this new...
Oh, I can't believe you tried that.
Metabolic Drive. Yeah, I know. It looks kind of iffy. But he's right. So that basically it's He has a two scoops of metabolic drive. I went ahead and put in the two scoops of the complete vanilla, a quarter cup of low-fat cottage cheese, half a cup of oatmeal, one banana, one apple, one cup of raw broccoli tops. So that was where it was iffy. And then you blend it until it's smooth. What I did, I blended it up, and it actually is really good. You can't taste the broccoli at all. The color is a little upsetting. It's a pretty bright green. It's like you're drinking I don't know what. So what I did is I added some ice. I don't think he mentioned that in the recipe, but he probably used his ice too. So I obviously put in some ice, and I added some fresh blueberries, and that changed the color to blue. And it tasted awesome. And that tartness of the blueberries also sort of rounds out the taste. And good recipe. I was impressed. Good job, Chad.
Nice job. I'm really surprised that you could pull off broccoli in a shake without it tasting like broccoli.
I think he's right. The apple sort of overpowers the broccoli. I also put in some flax seeds. So it really is a super shake.
How much stuff is in there?
Yeah, quite a bit.
Sounds like you have to mix it in a 5-gallon bucket.
I've got 2 Nalgene bottles full of it right now. I'm just like, oh, God.
Wow. You got us beat this week, but that's really cool. And also,
no way it tastes better than mine.
That's true.
Ice cream and muscle milk, that is a killer combination.
Well, let's jump into the FitCast news this week, obviously. You might know by now that episode 1 of the Video FitCast is up, and it's of the shakes that we did while we were in Denver. You might notice that the overhead fan was on high, which could be a little distracting, but overall, people are liking it, so keep a lookout for that. You can get it on thefitcast.com, and also look for episode 2 on Wednesday if you're a newsletter subscriber, and on Friday if you are not. You can go on Friday and get the video for episode number 2. And also, episode number 3 of the FitCast is going to be a special episode of the Video FitCast because this is going to be an all-reviews show where I'm going to get all the reviews in that I promised to do the past couple weeks. That's going to include Alan's Program Design Bible, Eric's Off-Season Training Manual, the JP Fitness Summit DVD. Also, I'm going to be doing John Berardi's Precision Nutrition. I'm finally going to be getting a copy of that. I've been really lazy and haven't gotten out to doing that. And also, I just want to give a shout-out to the people on the Precision Nutrition message boards that have been listening to the show. It's really cool that I didn't know you guys actually knew about the show, but with John there and JB there, I figured that you'd find out sooner or later. And also, I'm going to be reviewing 2 new Metabolic Drive low-carb flavors, which is going to be the orange cream and also the banana, which I'm very skeptical about. I can never think of having strawberry protein, so it's going to be odd. Also, with the FitCast magazine, if you've noticed, there's been some new articles up this week, and from now on, we're going to be doing a new article Monday through Friday, so every single day of the week, we're going to have a new article, so keep a lookout for that. Check back every day, because we'll be having some good stuff coming out. And also, with it, we have a new article that's up tonight on Friday, which is Jonas's called The Husband Project, which is really cool. He's going to be doing an update every week as he tries to drop the fat. And this is Galia Talkington's husband, so keeping it in the family. Per se.
Yeah, that's a really good article. I was impressed with that. I read well and inspirational too. It's always nice to put up sort of a challenge to yourself for the public to view because that makes it that much harder to fall off the wagon.
Yeah, I think you called it the Alpo challenge.
That was Dan John's verbiage there. He wrote an article a while back for T-Nation where he had the sort of an Alpo challenge where, you know, a person buys a can of dog food Alpo and tells all their friends, if I don't meet this specific goal on a specific time, then I'll eat this can of Alpo. So it gives you a real incentive to actually complete the project.
I have friends that do that when they're drunk too. You know who you are if you listen to the show. And $5. People will do anything for $5 these days. But anyways, just the last piece of FitCast news. I ordered some more FitCast t-shirts for those of you that I promised t-shirts. That's you, Alan, and also Cassandra. Your t-shirts are coming, and also a couple winners that for some reason or another didn't get their t-shirt, and I sent t-shirts to the wrong addresses. So That's my fault, and I'm going to clear it up. So sorry about that, and your t-shirts are coming. That wraps up for the FitCast news. Now let's jump into the news.
Well, this week's news, I picked an article from the Journal of Sports Science and Medicine called "Medical Issues Associated with Anabolic Steroid Use. Are They Exaggerated?" And basically this article explores whether or not the medical risk associated with steroid use has been exaggerated. The recent headlines of athletes sort of juicing is a reflection of the fact that only recently have all the major sports governing bodies, in North America at least, agreed to ban from competition and punish athletes who test positive for anabolic steroids. So this article points out that these testing programs don't seem to be preventing athletes from taking steroids, obviously, from, you know, the Tour de France to baseball. We know the stories. And, you know, the well-publicized health hazards are what they're addressing here. Basically, they're asking, is there something that athletes know, or are they simply naive regarding the dangers of steroids? And it gives a good history of steroids, and then it highlights what have been reported as both the good and the bad for steroids. And the good, as most of us know, include increased lean body mass, decreased body fat, increased strength, power, and endurance, enhanced recovery between workouts, and reduced muscle damage while you're working out. Also enhanced recovery from injury, increased neural transmission, and increased pain tolerance. The bad includes elevated blood pressure, increased risk for heart attack, gyno, decreased sperm count, infertility, testicular atrophy, impotence, acne, male pattern baldness, increased risk of liver tumors and liver damage, and increased risk of tendon tears, and also the well-touted roid rage. So then the article jumps into the bad list and takes a look a little closer at sort of what people have been viewing as the bad, or at least what's been widely publicized as being the bad, and it just takes a closer look. And a review of this literature suggests that the acute health effects are the ones that are sort of happen to you right when you take steroids. They appear to be temporary, or they're prevalent in individuals with genetic predisposition to those things already. For example, male pattern baldness and also heart disease. They reviewed the studies that looked at heart disease and heart attacks with steroids, and it's it can't be proven that these people weren't already genetically predisposed to this. Also, the long-term effects, basically the article concludes that limited data are available for the long-term effects. There was a study of Finnish powerlifters that followed 62 athletes who took steroids, and after 12 years, the athletes showed a 12.1% mortality rate compared to a 3.1% mortality rate for a control population. So they concluded that this showed sort of long-term detrimental effects for steroid users. Now, what the article says is what remains clear is why the folks who sort of took these boatloads of steroids back in the 70s and 80s are still doing fine today. So there's a lot of folks out there that are really healthy after taking steroids, by the bucketful. The conclusion of the article is basically stated that the scientific and medical communities have long been saying, oh, look at these awful effects from steroids. Yet the athletes have been using them on a regular basis, and this sort of leads to a situation where there's this distrust that develops between the athletic community and the medical and science communities. And basically, it says, which I agree with, scientists need to start doing real studies and putting more funding into studies of steroids to show both the positive and negative aspects of them, becoming more honest and sort of eroding this distrust, which, as it stands, sort of leads to a situation where a lot more people are going to end up abusing steroids. Now, one thing I found interesting, and perhaps we can get your input on this, John, was that the article stated that bodybuilders seem to fall victim to more of the bad list that we just talked about compared to strength and power athletes. And the authors sort of attribute this to the fact that bodybuilders are more likely to abuse steroids than strength and power athletes, often using sort of massive doses for several years without cycling off, as opposed to strength and power athletes who typically do it once or twice a year in cycles before they're before they're going into competition. So basically bodybuilders seem more likely to have a substance abuse disorder. So what do you think, Johnny? Do you agree, disagree, or do you have anything you want to talk about with this article?
From my experience dealing with, you know, strongmen, powerlifters and such, is there's guys who use them all the time, and there's guys who, you know, cycle on and off. I think because of the nature of bodybuilding, they need, you know, big muscles, but they also need to be lean, and you get into, you know, the diuretics and clenbuterol or something like that, where they're looking to, you know, cut weight and also stay big. So I would say that they're probably using more, and, you know, maybe the kind of the obsessive compulsive aspect of bodybuilding could lead them to use, you know, larger doses and, you know, like a not a physical dependence, but a psychological dependence on it.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So maybe.
Yeah. What did you guys think overall of the article?
I liked it a lot just because I mean, just from all I've read about steroids, it's something that I probably never do, but it's really interesting to read up on it. Whether it's like even an article that was brought up in the past week that was written by Lou Schuler a while back, and it seems like if taken correctly in cycles, at a lower dose, at a reasonably low dosage, steroids might not be too bad for you. I've seen like pieces on HBO Real Sports. I think there was just a piece on it last week about just regular everyday Joes that were taking steroids, but they're taking low dosages, and they're just doing it to get results in the gym and not to do anything crazy. But it's just those cases where people are, like you said, John, not doing cycles and just overdoing it. They're getting hurt. They're killing themselves, and you're seeing like things happen, like your arms are exploding and such.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's playing the devil's advocate, but it's not saying anything new for people who know about steroids, but I'm glad to see it in sort of a real journal. And I agree with their conclusion about how the medical community is sort of anti-steroids, and they won't even admit some of the positive benefits of steroids, and that leads to a situation where anybody who knows about steroids is going to be like, screw those guys, they had no freaking clue what steroids are. And, you know, once they get into sort of that cycle of being illegal with it, they might go overboard with it, as opposed to a more reasonable approach if you had more educated and more well-funded studies to use as your knowledge base for this.
Like, it's all about being educated. There's one kid at my college who like, I've seen him inject himself. Like, he's taking steroids, and you can just tell from his body. Like, I don't give me all this crap that there's no way you can just say someone's doing steroids by looking at him. But trust me, this kid was he's doing steroids. I don't want to describe him, but he's friggin' huge, and he's basically only goes to the gym 2 or 3 times a week, drinks like crazy, gets drunk like every night, and he still has bigger arms than anyone in the gym. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah. We had one of those at SMU too.
And it looks like, from what he's told me, he does cycle on and off, and but from what I see, he takes a lot of that stuff. And I've never seen him cycle off, so I don't know if he's just trying to make excuses, or it's just really scary when you see even college kids doing it. It's there in college too.
One thing I thought was cool about the article is it sort of dispelled the roid rage myth. They've done studies that showed that 90%, I think, of the people who actually take steroids, it has no effect on their behavior. It increases aggression a little bit, but that can actually be good in sports, obviously. But there's no such thing as, like, you know, have you guys ever seen Walker, Texas Ranger, the episode about steroids?
Oh, I missed that one.
That one was awesome. It's so cheesy and over the top. You just it's a you know necessary viewing material. But you know people are like freaking out and you know beating their wives when they're taking steroids. And this article showed that the majority of people don't. Some people do experience you know mania at times, but it seems to be at a low percentage of the population.
They're probably the same people who go crazy when they drink as well.
Yeah.
Right. Right. Or the same people who, like, throw their toaster through the window and it burns their toast.
Well, it's bad because it's I saw some guy at the dealership the other week and he actually threw a Ford F-150 through the dealership front window. I think he might have been on the juice. I don't know. Oh, and also on that note, Sammy Sosa declined coming on the show for comment on the steroid issue. He sent it back in Spanish, so I'm pretty sure he said no, though. I saw a no in it. But Mark, I'm still waiting to hear from you, and also Barry, so let us know.
That's right. Mark just took creatine, huh?
Oh, yeah. Or maybe just some HGH, but it's all good. Well, let's jump into the roundtable with John. That's the reason why we're here this week. We've got a ton of questions from all you FitCast listeners out there, and I'm very appreciative for that. So let's start it off. First off, Lisa asks, I'd like to hear you talk more about your new gym, Excel. And also, I would like to know, are you having fun working there?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's obviously a little more stressful owning your own place and knowing you have to get people in the door to pay the rent every month. At the same time, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I've worked for other people before and, you know, I didn't like it. You know, I saw things that, in my opinion, were wrong, and I wanted to kind of do it my way and do it right. And I think it's working because you know the people are really hearing about us. You know, papers, online, just in general, in the community. You know, I talked to the police chief in the town of Waltham, and he's like, oh, I already heard about you guys. You know, so you know it seems to be doing well. And, you know, it's definitely better than working for somebody else.
You know what I think the coolest thing about owning your own gym would be? Controlling your music selection.
Yes.
No more techno remixes of classic rock songs.
Some Dido remixes.
Inya.
Yeah.
Yeah. Occasionally some of the members give some funny looks, but I'm like, hey, it's my gym. I tell them they can bring in their own stuff if I approve it.
That's right. Bring in your own stuff and bring headphones.
Yeah.
Well, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's good. I mean, the best part about it also, besides that, is I get to pick all the equipment. You know, so I'm not working out in a commercial gym where we have, you know, crappy bars and you know, leg extensions and 18 benches. I mean, I got to order all that. You know, I went through Elite Fitness Systems, York, Pro Star, works on competition sets for weightlifting. We have two platforms. You know, you won't find that in a, you know, in your average Golds.
Right. Well, next question. Rockhard from the forums asks: we all know that nutrition is important for health and appearance, but do you feel it is a lot of that it has a lot of impact on your strength levels? If you aren't overly concerned with the six pack. Would a plate full of wings accompanied by an apple and a bowl of veggies be acceptable to you as a strongman and a powerlifter?
Yeah, you know, for me, except for the apple and the veggies, it'd be fine. I think eating well is good, but, you know, like I love pizza and wings, and if I wanted to deprive myself, I'd be a bodybuilder. I think poor nutrition can have an effect on recovery and in turn, you know, a negative effect on training, but that's if your nutrition's, you know, terrible. You know, I'm loose with my diet all the time, sometimes, not all the time, but and I don't feel like it, you know, impairs my strength. And that's not to say that, you know, it's an excuse for powerlifters or strongmen to, you know, be fat and eat donuts all day. But it's not like, you know, if they eat dessert, they're going to be, you know, bombing out in their next meet or anything. So it's good. It's for me, you know, it keeps me sane. You know, I have a figure client and she's got to be really strict. So I like to tease her, you know, oh, I had pizza last night. Our place is right next to a pizzeria too. So I tend to go in there from time to time, you know, and eat. I mean, well, aside from that, I mean, I notice that I'm mentally clearer if I eat clean, you know, no blood sugar swings, mm-hmm. you know, no kind of mental fog. Right. I also feel like I lean out really quickly when I eat well. And typically, like, the only time I eat really, really, like, real, real well is, you know, before a contest, and that's usually just to make weight. My last contest, I had to drop 22 pounds in 5 days. Damn. So I had to go a little low on the carbs and everything else, and the water and everything. But, you know, other than that, you know, I don't think it's, you know, I think if you eat 75% of your food is good, I think you're fine.
So what's your weight when you're not competing?
Usually like 210.
210, and how tall are you?
5'9".
5'9".
I've been up to 220. I was 220 when I had to drop that weight for the last contest. I actually dropped 22 pounds, and then I gained 19 of it back by the within 48 hours. So, but it's not it wasn't pleasant, I tell you.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like it.
Yeah, me and Eric Cressy are. You know, pretty good at dropping weight. We've mastered it. But.
Sounds good. We'll jump into the next question that comes from New Life. I'd like to know what your take is on gear. Do you think one should train with belts and wraps if one tends to train heavy?
Those aren't really related questions, are they?
Basically, I think it depends. You know, if you're a power lifter, especially in a federation that allows, you know, lifting gear, wraps, belts, suits, well, they all allow belts, but, you know, wraps, suits especially, use it. I mean, you'd be insane not to. For an athlete, not always. I'm not always a fan just because, you know, if you're using it for injury prevention, you know, it's debatable. I mean, whether a lifting belt actually even prevents injuries. You know, there's conflicting data. If you read Stu McGill's research, he doesn't really say that it does. You know, if you're an athlete looking to lift more weight for the sake of lifting more weight, well, I mean, are you trying to get stronger? Are you trying to lift weights? I mean, like a belt might help you, and a belt and wraps might help you lift more. But you know, it's because you have some support. What I would say is get your abs, your core, whatever you want to call it. If that's the weak link. Get it stronger because you won't have that belt out on the playing field. So you got to train your body as a big chain, make the entire thing stronger. Don't cover it up with a Band-Aid, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Good point. I totally misinterpreted this first question. I thought he meant gear as in steroids.
Yeah.
That's why I was like,
luckily he's the belt part. Otherwise, I thought that too.
Okay. Well, he also asks if you, John, have any info on. Or if you use a BCAA daily?
I don't. Just because it's another thing to mix up and drink. I usually just do a shake pre-workout or during the workout and workout. Some of my clients take them. My figure client takes them and has had good success, you know, along with, you know, watching her diet. And, you know, and she's real religious and always has them when she comes in. So she seems to notice... good results, especially as she's dieting down. She seems to preserve muscle well, whether that's from the BCAAs plus everything else. You know, you could say it's a good diet also, but she actually didn't have to do any cardio to diet down for her last show. And her cardio. But I saw research years ago that BCAAs increased fat mobilization pre-workout, using 30 grams, something like that. I don't know, maybe it's working.
Well, John, we just missed a lot of what you just said. It seems like, is Tony there too? Because someone must be downloading something at Eric's house.
Tony's in the background, but he's not right there. I don't know if he's downloading anything. I can go yell at him.
Just knock on the door before you go in.
Yeah.
It just seems like it kind of got jarbled, if you wouldn't mind repeating after that.
Sure. Hold on, you want me to try it again? You want me to go yell at him?
Sure.
You feel free to do both.
All right. I'll try it again. If we don't get it, I'll go yell. As far as BCAAs go, I don't personally use them. I usually just drink a shake pre-workout and my post-workout shake. It's just extra mixing that I don't feel like doing. My figure client uses them, and some of my other clients use them as well. My figure client, going into her last show, used them throughout, and it seemed like it preserved muscle. She didn't do any cardio, but she was pretty strict with her diet, and she came in, real lean. And I saw research years ago that showed that BCAAs at a dose of about 30 grams increased fat mobilization when taken pre-workout. So maybe they're working. I don't know. But she was lean, so took
a
couple first place.
You said 30 grams?
That was what the research showed, and they said you could probably get a similar effect at a lower dose. So I think she was doing like 15 or 20. Mm-hmm. She's fairly tall. She's 5'10", about 145, maybe 138 at the contest or something. Mm-hmm. But so that seemed to work, and it didn't. It causes some people's stomach, upset, but it was fine for her.
Sounds good. That came out much better. So we'll keep going. The next question comes from Irish Daza, who seems to be asking a lot of questions lately, but we'll keep going. What's the longest you've ever been stuck on a strength plateau? How did you break it? How did your gains progress afterwards?
The longest, my front squat was stuck at 305 for 2 years. Now, I wasn't training front squats all the time, but whenever I came back to it, I would do, squat-like exercise, like a West Side type routine, and I would come back, and I just couldn't get over 305, and it was just, it was really frustrating. So I finally, I started a block of Olympic weightlifting, where I was basically wave-loading front squats twice a week and back squats once a week. So I was squatting in one form or another three times a week, doing up to 30 sets, over 85% in the squatting movements each week. I only did it for about 5 weeks. I mean, you couldn't do that all the time. I couldn't personally anyway. But on the sixth week, I retested front squats and did 370 at the same body weight, about 205.
Damn.
And then a week later,
jump.
It went up so fast. I think it was just the frequency and the wave loading. At first I was like, I'm not sure if I'm gonna be able to do it. And I just after the first week, when the initial soreness was every day was gone, I could squat, and the next day I could squat again. It was awesome. You had to build up the work capacity. Which I kind of did slowly prior to that. And then a week after that, I PR'd on deadlifts as well. I pulled 605, and all the Olympic pulls really helped in that respect. And I actually wrote an article about it. It's reposted on our website, excelstrength.com, and it's about what I did for that. So it's a pretty simple plan, but it worked.
Yeah, right. I would be happy with a 305 plateau for sure on a front squat.
I'd be happy with a 205. Yeah. Those front squats just kill me.
Me too.
I actually love them, though. I mean, they're my favorite. They're hard. I mean, but they're an awesome exercise. I try for strongman. They give me a great carryover, like for tire flipping. They're awesome for it.
How do you hold the bar on a front squat?
Olympic style.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. I find most people can't. They just have to work their form. Occasionally, you have some problems with limb length, especially like the lower part of your arm being real long. But for the most part, if people work a little bit of wrist flexibility and mm-hmm. Just know how to hold it right, because you don't hold it with closed fists, remember? I mean, when I hold a front squat, my fingertips are on it. So it's, and people say, oh, my arms are too big. And I tell them, well, Shane Hammond's 5'9", 370, and he can do it. So I don't know how big your arms are, but... so after that, yeah, I stopped front squatting for a while, just to rest and get some variety. Mm-hmm. When I came back, of course, they felt heavy, but I worked up recently to 175 kilos, which is 385.
Damn.
Again, same body weight, I think it was maybe 210. So it's still, continuing to progress. I'm gonna shoot for 400 soon. I'm starting up a similar block of training, in my preparation for nationals this year. Uh-huh. And a similar loading scheme, so we'll see what happens.
Are you willing to eat a can of Alpo if you don't get to 400?
No, I can't. This is probably my last national, so I got to get all my lifts, Oh.
So, 400 would be awesome.
I can't eat the thing.
Speaking of eating, you've pretty much already covered this question, but E. Martin asked, what does your typical daily diet look like? And, what's the sort of caloric breakdown, or do you even keep track?
First, I don't track calories or macro breakdowns at all. It's way too much hassle for me. And I found when I used to do that, it got me, which is a little bit leaner. The payoff as far as strength was nothing. And just the overall, for all the, the work, it was just, it wasn't anything I really cared about that much. And luckily also, I lean out fairly easily. So, I was like, forget it. I'll just eat what I want. Mm-hmm. But a typical daily diet, this is if I'm being good, meal one would be like in the morning, since I get up early. We have clients at like 6 a.m., so I'm getting up at 4:30 or 5, so I'm not going to be cooking anything. So it's usually a shake. I use Infusion by San, Muscle Milk, Metabolic Drive, something like that. Mm-hmm. That and fish oil capsules. It's real easy. Meal two, a few hours later, whenever I get a break from clients, beef or chicken and vegetables of some sort, and lots of A1. I'm a huge fan of A1. And then meal three is usually pre-workout, something like Cytofuse or Surge, pre-workout or during the workout, and post-workout a little while later, same thing. Meal four, same as meal two, beef or chicken, vegetables, and then some fish oil. Meal five, another shake, Infusion, Metabolic Drive, Muscle Milk, something like that, with some walnuts or almonds. Meal six is dinner, and it's, again, beef or chicken, vegetables, fish oil. I find I do better on low carbs. Some people say they don't perform well on it. I'm fine. I feel great. So, but then again, I'm not afraid to eat pizza. Like I said, we're next to a pizzeria, and I'll go in there and get a deep dish pizza, and they're like, this is for three people, and I'm like, that's great. I'll eat bad food if I want it. And I think, sometimes people get a little too obsessive as far as eating goes. If you're not dieting down for a competition or just for some specific goal, I don't think, like I said earlier, I don't think eating dessert once in a while is going to kill you. When you're 80, you're going to say, damn, I wish I had that ice cream. when I'm good, that's what the diet looks like. When I'm bad, it can be a little worse.
Well, that sounded really good, actually. The quality of food was excellent in that daily menu.
As I get closer to a competition, it gets better because I know I got to make weight. As I'm in the off season, like after nationals, if you want to have me on again, I'll tell you my diet that day, and it will be awesome.
Yeah, let's plan it. We'll say, do you know what the date is?
October 21st.
Cool.
That's set. You'll be on the show.
Uh-huh. A day in the stomach of John Sullivan. That'll be good. Trust me.
There we go. I don't even have to make up a creative title for that episode.
Although, actually, Dave Tate's article, the article that Barati did on Dave Tate, that's actually the worst I've ever seen. I'm never that bad. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, let's jump into the next question. This comes from Mind Power. What is the best way to get started with strongman type training?
First, you have to find a place with the equipment, because it's not always easy to find. More and more people are selling it now, but to find a place that has everything, it's tough to find. There are a few out there. Depends on where you live. And the next thing is you have to find a group of competitors. Because there are a lot of people, these days who are teaching strongman exercises or using strongman implements. They've never actually done the events themselves. They've never competed. And I just see when I see people doing it, I can tell they've never competed because the form is horrible. And aside from the fact that you might not get the training effect that you want, you risk injury. There is a right way to do all this stuff. And the best people at strongman, just like any other sport, are strong, but they also know how to flip a tire, lift a stone, press a log, everything like that. So really, I would say find a group of people who compete, who've done it before for years, And myself at our gym, myself and Brad Cardoza, I've competed for 5 years. Brad's been competing for four. He's gotten a World's Strongest Man in China. He was there last year. He's a a pro lightweight, and you know, we've been doing it for a while. So I mean, you know, that's the kind of people we want to learn from. Not a guy who saw it in a book and then decided to do it with his athletes because he got a tire. And you know, you see people tearing biceps because they're doing it wrong.
Mm-hmm. Well, moving on. Next question is from Galia. And she asks, in the strongman world, what are the common backgrounds for the competitors?
Typically, powerlifting, because you know, it's a similar strength sport. So usually powerlifting, occasionally Olympic lifting, occasionally bodybuilding, but usually powerlifting, or some sort of sports background like football and track and field. Like Brad Cardoza was a track and field star at the University of Massachusetts, and built up a lot of explosive power through, you know, all the Olympic lifting he did. So that served him really well. And some guys just come into strongman, you know, they with no real background in strength sports, they just like to work out, and they find their way into it one way or another. And sometimes they do well, sometimes they don't. It is more athletic than it looks. Mm-hmm. Not that it's not gymnastics or anything, or it's not that fluid, but there is quite a bit of athleticism, and you can see it when guys have been training, you know, as athletes, or in guys who just come from the gym and who are strong. But it takes more than just being strong. You have to, you know, you practice on the implements and just, you know, general, you know, coordination.
Mm-hmm. I got a question for you, John. Do you have any sort of rituals or anything that you do before a competition to help you? We have a friend, Danny King, who does this strongman.
Yes.
He wears
me
two
Nashville
socks.
Like,
he's talking some shit.
Oh, cool.
We'll be in the
same. He wears like two socks that are like bright blue and green. Oh, no kidding. Very,
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. He said he was coming after me.
He's definitely grown. Do you have any rituals like that, the tube sock ritual?
No, not really. The only thing is maybe that some people might find weird is I don't eat anything on the day of a competition. So, I never, like, not a thing. I'll drink, you know, Gatorade or something like that, but I never eat. And some people are like, well, what if the competition starts at noon? I'm like, okay. My first competition started at noon. It went till 9 p.m. So I basically ate nothing the whole day. But, you know, I was so keyed up and so ready to go that it never bothered me. I won, so, I mean, I guess it wasn't that bad. But that's the only thing that's
getting
weird.
I hit the wall. Yeah,
no,
just,
I don't.
You don't hit
the
wall
without
any.
I guess I have enough Gatorade in here, or sugar, or Red Bull, or something. But no, it's you know, it's weird. I kind of just my body's like, all right, whatever you give me, I'll work with. So you know, and that's it really, because I just like don't like feeling that heavy feeling in my stomach, because some of the events can go for 75 seconds or 90 seconds straight. Like if you have an event like a tire flip sled drag, you might flip a tire down a 100-foot course and drag a sled back. I actually had an event at the contest 2 years ago that I did that it took the whole time. It took 90 seconds for me to finish. So, like, you don't want to have food in your stomach at that point, because you know it comes up sometimes.
Well, John, it's been awesome hearing your view. Things. It's so great. You know, it's a different perspective from each guest. And you guys still there?
Yeah. It looks like John's cutting out. Yeah, it looks like everyone's cutting out right now. But again, thanks for coming on, John. Before we leave, we have to thank our sponsors. First off, TurbulenceTraining.com. Boost muscle growth and blowtorch body fat at TurbulenceTraining.com. Check out Craig's new women's Turbulence Training. He just released that. And also Greens Plus. Greens Plus for great health. Can't forget them. Are you guys still there?
I'm still here.
Alrighty. John Williams, you there? No John Williams. Well, that's really weird.
Yeah. You guys are cutting out, but I can barely hear you.
Then maybe it's my internet connection. I don't know.
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay, yeah.
Well, this is probably a sign that we should wrap up this week's show. That will wrap it up for episode number 17 of the FitCast. My name's Kevin Larrabee.
I'm John Sullivan.
Yeah, Williams is there somewhere, and John Sullivan's with us as well. Well, our show kind of just fell apart, so we'll let everyone go out there, and don't forget to check out thefitcast.com for all the show notes and downloads. Subscribe through iTunes, and also check out the FitCast magazine, the new video FitCast. We got a lot of stuff going on, and hopefully next week we'll have a better internet connection. We'll see you next time.
Well, if you came down, I mean, we got our place. We actually, which I didn't even go into, I should have. But the guys who train at our place, the trainers, you know, Rebecca Manda, who's the other co-owner, she was a junior Olympic gymnast. Myself, Brad Cardoza, strongman competitor. Eric, Carl Valley, who's a USA track and field level 2 coach. And Matt Delaney, who's a competitive Olympic weightlifter. And a USA Weightlifting Club coach. So we got a pretty well-rounded group of strength athletes. Here's, I mean, we could all, you know, it'd be a pretty good show if you ever do come down.
Yeah, we could just do a whole show like there. I could just let John take a week off.
Yeah, I'll be prepping for nationals on the 21st.
Mm-hmm.
For the 21st, I got a smaller show in Paxton, Mass. On the 2nd, and then I think Eric's got a powerlifting competition coming up. Matt's got a competition tomorrow Sunday, but me and Eric, I know, will be training in full swing. And Brad, if Brad sees us lifting, he'll come out, of course, and show us up. I'm sure. So it could be Matt's just sick to watch doing the Olympic lifts. He's closing on a double body weight clean. He's like 160, and he did like 3-something the other day, so I think he'll get 320 soon. So it's pretty amazing because he's so little, and I'm just like, damn, you got skill. I mean, I can clean. I mean, I've cleaned more than him, but he's 160. I did it at like 210. I cleaned like 335, but, you know.
That's nuts. Are you going to be at the Ryan Lee conference or whatever?
When is it?
I think it's September, like, 28th and 29th or 30th or something like that.
I may, as long as it doesn't interfere with nationals prep. Because I got to win this year. I got to crush everybody. I was second last year, and I was pissed.
You better. You got to come back on the show and be like, fuck you. Make all these dudes I beat.
Yeah, I mean, luckily they're all good guys. I mean, they're, there's a lot of good guys there. I mean, there's a couple shit talkers, but in general, the guys who won are all cool.
Mm-hmm.
But still, I want to. I don't like losing, and I actually got hurt 2 weeks before nationals last year, like a real bad back injury. And my ART guy, who's in Melrose, he fixed me up. Basically, good enough to compete. I couldn't walk. I couldn't put my shoes on. Couldn't do anything. I didn't train for the 2 weeks prior to nationals, maybe 2.5 weeks. And he fixed me up good enough to go. So I mean, I can't bitch about second place, but. Training was going so well. I was like, "Oh, I'm gonna do awesome," and then I didn't. I did good, but no, not great.
What caused the back injury? Do you know?
I heard it in high school.
Oh, it's just a recurrence.
So it's basically been for 10 years, and it comes and goes, you know. But I was doing log. I've never actually heard it lift. I heard it lifting the first time, but deadlifting wrong in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And then, 485 with a rounded back,
just
gross. After that, I never heard it lifting. I always heard it, like, doing weird stuff. Like, I rolled over in bed one time asleep, and I was like, oh, you know, and I put it on my shoe and all this crap. So this is the first time I heard it, reheard it lifting, but this was the worst time. Even worse than the first time I did it. I'd never take Advil or anything like that. I took 10 Advil with 2 shots of whiskey with Wild Turkey 101, and nothing happened. And I'm like, okay, I'm fucked. I'm in trouble here. Yeah, like, if I wasn't from AIT guy, I wouldn't have even been able to sit on the plane, let alone compete. I couldn't sit. I couldn't stand. I mean, it was, oh, it was brutal. But he's awesome.
Who is it out in Melrose?
John Marchese. He's at Highlands Chiropractic. It's on Main Street. He's real good. I'm trying to get his partner to come into our gym and do soft tissue stuff there. Hopefully that'll work.
Do you have a lot of, like, group fitness? I know you said you have kickboxing coming in soon. I know that's not group fitness, but...
Yeah, I mean, we want it to be group fitness, just not be so lame.
Yeah.
Like, that's the goal. I mean, I want... It's real kickboxing, like real Thai boxing with Thai boxing pads and stuff, which is a great workout, but it's also like, you know, you really get to hit stuff, you know, and you really get to kick stuff, and... You know, that's way more fun than just doing step, I think. I mean, I could never do a... Well, I'm a strong man. I could never do step aerobics, but I did martial arts for years, and that to me is fun. It's a great way to get a progression out. So we're going to do that. We have that and Olympic weightlifting. The club's actually... There's been quite a bit of interest in the club, in the Olympic weightlifting club, so we've... you know, that's really taken off, and we got some pretty strong kids there.
You're not doing any, like, yoga classes, are you?
No. One of the reporters came by from, like, the Newton Town Crier or something and, you know, kind of asked that. And I was like, no, you won't find that here. And, of course, she quoted us as, you know, they do regular personal training, but they mainly cater to powerlifters. I'm like, asshole.
Yeah,
I didn't say that. I'm like, because, you know, that just costs us, you know, business because all those normal people who go, oh, they're powerlifters. I'm not a powerlifter.
Yeah.
Every woman who
just intimidates the shit out of a bunch of people.
Yeah, you know, like we have some powerlifters training there, but I mean it's generally, you know, like some student athletes and normal people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I was like, oh, that's a picture of me like deadlifting 550. I deadlifted the day before. She's like, can you show us? You have any people training? We had no people coming in, so I was like, I'll do a deadlift. I pulled like 550. Of course, and it was with Olympic plates, so, like, the weights are, like, out to the end. The bars are bending like crazy. And she takes a picture of that and uses it. And it was, like, the heading for the article was packing on the pounds. Like, thanks for sabotaging our business.
Yeah, but seriously, how many people are going to read the...
Oh yeah, they'll read it. Yeah. For sure. I mean, like, how many people have actually called? Like, a guy came in, his son's a wrestler. The guy came in today, his son's a football player, and they want him to train there. So, I mean, it will attract certain types of people, but it alienated other people. I was like, damn it. So I got to be careful talking to reporters.
You don't do any training of, like, UFC athletes, do you?
That's what I want. That's what I ideally want to do. That's what I'm going to do when I – well, not necessarily UFC, but I'm going to start doing mixed martial arts when I get done with strongman, hopefully this year. It's something different to train for.
Yeah,
and I want to be. I want to just get in better shape and just, you know, like I miss hitting stuff and you know, obviously don't miss being hit. But that's the goal. To have some MMA guys in there. A guy came by from American Top Team. He trains with them. He grapples. He's a monster. He's like 5'9", but like 220 and real solid. 230 maybe. And he apparently doesn't even lift weights. I'm like, so what do you do for weights? He's like, I grapple, that's it. I'm like, holy shit. You're huge, dude. He shook my hand, and I'm like, oh, crush it. And usually I'm the guy doing the crushing. So he may start up, which would be awesome, you know, to get more guys like him in. Because I mean, we're the kind of place that could, you know, do so much for someone like that. All the thick bars and the thick dumbbells, and, you know, we're getting sandbags and, you know, all that type of conditioning and all the Olympic stuff. That's perfect.